If I carried on drinking, I don't think I'd be here. So my story started after a night out, really drunk, logged into Twitter and tweeted. Alcohol has kind of been really close to my story throughout. So when I was 23 years old, I decided to stop drinking. I woke up and went to the office as normal. And while we were driving into the office, emails were coming through from clients, from potential investors, being like, what are you on about, Dom? And had to pull over on the road and look at my phone and realize that I'd been sending, not me obviously, but my account had been sending emails out from like 3 or 4 in the morning to different people saying different malicious stuff. Like, so we got on that day, everyone hated me. So there was no one to go to. I'd started to really burn all bridges with friends, family, this new girl I'm seeing.
Do you know the one thing in your book that surprised me?
You've just been a bit of a knob, been a bit of a dick. So we got to the office one day and basically on that day, our entire business had gone. I'm very worried that the next time I break through the glass bottom, the level of destruction it's going to cause me in my life is so much greater than last time that actually I'm still scared. I'm scared.
You drank and you did, like there was so much chaos and mayhem around that.
The speed I went from the top of the slope to rock bottom was 9 months. I destroyed so much of my life in 9 months. I think that's possible for anyone. This can go in, or this doesn't have to go in the podcast. It can go in the podcast if you wanted to.
Don McGregor, thank you for joining me.
No problem.
So I'm going to hit you with a big open question to start the podcast. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
God. Now I'm going to feel really inadequate. Who am I? So I am an entrepreneur. I ran a couple of companies, started off in social media marketing, grew that to 700 people across the world. Left that, started an investment firm. It's quite funny, I've never asked this question before, and I've just realized I've gone straight into my pitch of who I am. Like, it's like my bio. But what problem do I solve? I like to think that through my life and through my experiences, I like to think I'm a good role model. So I think the problem I solve is like giving people like a case study for things that can happen in their lives in a good way and in a bad way. But showing people, be it through like the work I do in education, the work I do in investments, the work I do in just like content, just give people like a case study for what can happen in their lives.
I agree. I think you are a good role model, and I think the more
did say role model, I said case study.
A case study.
I'm not. I don't know if I'm. I don't know if I want to be a role model, but I'm a case study.
Yeah. I think from an outsider's point of view, I could say there will be people that have followed your journey and followed kind of your story and say that you are a role model to younger people. When you look at like back at your early years, what did that look like for you then, role model wise? Was there somebody that you were like, I want to be them, and that's been kind of like a path that you followed?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I posted on LinkedIn the other day that I saw someone post, I don't believe in role models. And I took a little bit of offense to it. I was like, what are you saying there? If you're saying you don't believe in the idea of like a role model, is that you don't believe that there's someone who's previously walked a path that you can be inspired by? And that made me a bit sad. So I kind of like clapped back and kind of said, oh, I've just seen a post about role models. So I am a big like studier of like history. Okay. So my role models are people who I think you can look at their entire life, their entire chapter, and be like, that was actually really impressive what you did. So like, my biggest kind of role model in business and like life and creativity is like Walt Disney. So I love going to Disneyland. I love seeing that ethos of that business that they've created, what he did. But what inspires me the most is like, really, when you break down that story of like what he did, he drew a mouse.
Mm.
And it like, there's a famous poster that said, we hope that no one ever lose sight of the fact that it all started with a mouse. And that, from that to something so much bigger, the first step where it led to was incredible. So that for me is like what I look for. And then I've got other people in history of like, Napoleon, I think he's really kind of impressive in terms of like a leadership and, what he did. And other people I look for as like historical figures, like Andrew Carnegie as well. I think what he did was phenomenal. So I like to study people's full lives and people's full experiences and stories and get a sense of who they were as an individual. And it's a little bit like reading fiction, because you create the stories in your mind about these characters. I do that with history. I create the kind of narrative and stories of people in my mind about what they are and who they did from my own perspective. So they were my role models. You know, they were my role models with people who have been there and done it and achieved incredible things in their lives.
You said there about Walt Disney, it all started with a mouse. I guess I don't know if this is going to be the weirdest question of the podcast, but what was your mouse?
A tweet. Yeah. So my whole story started with a tweet. So, you know, was at university, got drunk and decided, oh, you know what, I'm going to, I woke up the next day and there was no toilet paper. So, you know, so I woke up and said, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tweet about this. Logged into Twitter, created a student account called Student Problems, made a logo on my mobile, and I put a toilet paper picture as my logo and tweeted, when you run out of toilet paper after a night out, hashtag Student Problems. That was my story, started.
That was your mouse?
That was my mouse, was a tweet, yeah.
I like it.
So I decided to tweet to the world.
And then from that, obviously, you're now set here, you're talking about the problems you solve in terms of like entrepreneurship. One of the big things I wanted to talk to you about today is obviously this week, as we sit here and we talk, you've got a new book out, which solves a problem. I guess, what's made you write the book now? And what problem does that solve for people that are watching? And what would they be banging their head against their wall saying, I want to solve this problem?
Yeah, I think, so my story started after a night out, really drunk, logged into Twitter and tweeted. Alcohol has kind of been really close to my story throughout. So when I was 23 years old, I decided to stop drinking. And this was back off a number of kind of incidents which occurred where I realized that I had a choice to make in my life, whether I can go on and try and build a company and be someone, or alcohol was going to continuously hold me back from my experience. So the book's called I'm Never Drinking Again, How to Stop Drinking So Much and Change Your Relationship with Alcohol. And I think the problem it's solving is showing to people that, like, there's a spectrum, yeah? You know, what I'm saying is you don't have to go completely sober like I do. In terms of my own experience, like, I couldn't drink. Alcohol couldn't be in my life. But the benefits you get from changing your relationship with alcohol, or actually even just considering the fact that alcohol and you have a relationship in the first instance, and this relationship needs managing, is a really big step forward to thinking, actually, I can have a better life for me. So I fundamentally believe is that you remove alcohol or any other addiction into your life. You know, we're all fighting some kind of battle or some kind of things. If you manage to kind of overcome your addictions or problems, it gives you a much kind of better opportunity to live in the kind of a true life to yourself. And when I say it like that, everyone goes, yeah, that makes complete sense. And then what I kind of say is that actually, you know, the range of addictions we're looking at, we're not talking about someone who's an alcoholic who drinks a bottle of vodka a day. That's not what alcohol is. Alcohol dependency is a much kind of more sleepwalking issue where you could not realize that alcohol has a control over you and it impacts your lives in so many areas. So I try and shed light on like the whole spectrum of alcoholism in terms of heavy drinking, what people think about it is, and actually what reality is. So I think a lot more people sit in the reality of alcohol dependency than they think. So what I'm trying to showcase is that alcohol dependency is an addiction, is ruining your life and actually stopping you living full potential. And me taking alcohol out of my life allowed me to reach like a level of my own potential, which I really kind of brought happiness to me, I think is probably the story of the book.
And it's like you said, that it is a spectrum of things. I was lucky enough to read the book before we sat down, and it's an amazing book. It's part story, it's like memoir, but it's also like deep with psychology and science and facts and life hacks, and like it's like an amalgamation of like a bit of a survival guide. But you, I think we go back to earlier, you're like, oh, I don't want to, I'm not a role model. Like, I definitely like think there will be young people that will read that and be like, yeah, I think now's the time to knock it on the head. So I guess going back to your days at Social Chain, you were already on the mountain to being successful. So like, where do you think your life would have ended up if you hadn't have stopped drinking?
So like the difficulty thing with this, the book, is like, I've kind of had two real thoughts about it. Is like, the truth is like, someone who needs this book will not buy this book. You know, I didn't know that I had a problem until someone else told me. And like, it was very hard for people around me to communicate that something was going on, because like, you know, we were very young, we're 23 years old. So it was very hard for people around me, my friends especially, to kind of explain my actions are not normal, because all we knew from weekends was going out getting drunk. And that was normal. So for me to like realize I had a problem, I had to have someone to tell me. So I managed to go and get therapy, and the therapist kind of told me I had a problem, but it wasn't people around me. People around me were like, yeah, you've just been a bit of a knob, been a bit of a dick. And the amount of times I was a dick and a knob just increased so many, you know, came every single time I got drunk. So I couldn't express that I was masking my emotions and that I was medicating and that I was kind of beyond anxious and depressed around everything that's going on in my life. So I didn't know that. And I need someone to tell me that. So the book's almost got an audience where it's the way to say to someone that's struggling, give this a go, because this might help you. As well as then people buying it themselves as well.
There was a few chapters in the book that like filled me with, I don't know if the right word's anxiety, but like thinking about your situation. One of them was the cyber attack.
Yeah.
Talk me through that, like how to read it is one thing, but I guess to live it must be like another.
Yeah, so for context, like I woke up and went to the office as normal, and while we were driving into the office, emails were coming through from clients, from potential investors, being like, what are you on about, Dom? And had to pull over on the road and look at my phone and realize that I'd been sending, not me obviously, but my account had been sending emails out from like 3 or 4 in the morning to different people saying different malicious stuff. So we got to the office one day, and basically on that day, our entire business had gone. All clients, future investment, everything had gone because of the level of malicious emails. So like to walk into a day which was supposed to be a day where we're going paintballing with the team, and it was supposed to be a positive day, to actually fight in survival for the business, your body, you feel your body completely change. Like it's a really kind of really odd experience. I can't explain, where like you feel like you've emotionally drained. You've got nothing left. You feel like you've lost everything you've ever worked for, and you don't necessarily see a future. And this is a really interesting thing. This is kind of when I kind of look at like the suicidal ideation that I had, and I kind of always think, why did I never kill myself? You know, this is something I really think about. It's like, why did I never just, because as I say, I talk in the book a lot about how I just wanted to jump in front of a train, and why did I never do it? And I think the reason I never did it is because I always had hope and belief. And I think that moment was a really kind of dark time, because you started to lose hope a little bit, and throughout the day you could see things coming back and things getting better, but it just led me to like start to lose a little bit of hope. But then I went home, and then I had a couple of drinks, and that kind of mellowed me out. And like I guess throughout this whole experience, like things would happen, and the way I'd react would be determine my future. And every time something was happening, be it good or be it bad, I was drinking. So when something big happened, like that cyber attack, where my emotions were really high, but I needed to drink more to numb and forget. So it was a Thursday night, and like that weekend, I got absolutely bad. That night I got, you know, a couple of glasses of wine, but it was just to numb and forget. And the more things that happen, the more things that are going on in your life, the more things that are occurring, the more I needed to drink to forget. So it was difficult, because when you're in a bad place and these things happen, when you're in a good place and these things happen, they're tough. But when you're in a bad place and these things keep happening, like cyber attack, legal issues, cash flow problems, it's just a barrage of like, for me, how I felt is like hope being drained one step at a time. And like, if I got to a point where I had no hope, I don't think I'd be here. So you ask my life what my life would be like if I didn't drink. If I carried on drinking, I don't think I'd be here. I think genuinely like stopping, like, the way I was reacting, the way I was behaving, you know, I remember the last time I drank, I was walking into the road, you know, and part of me deep down thinks I was hoping for a car to hit me. But like the reality is, if I kept drinking, I'd have just got so drunk one time that the intrusive thoughts that we all have, you know, be it like throwing a snowball at someone, and that the basic level of intrusive thoughts, my like deep intrusive thoughts were jumping in front of a train. When you're drunk, those intrusive thoughts can take control. So like, there was definitely in my mind, there was me doing damage to myself at some point, which I think would have led me not to be here.
Paint me a picture. Like what story was you selling? Like what story was you telling yourself? Like the morning after, like we've all been there, and people that might be watching this hungover on a Sunday in bed on YouTube. Like, and the story that you tell yourself, where it's like you justify your behavior, you justify the reason you're acting like you're acting? What story were you telling yourself at that point?
I think the biggest story was like, this is just, I think that there's two narratives. Like, you know, I looked a lot like celebrity influences, like of young people who were in situations, not obviously like directly comparable to me, but someone like Justin Bieber, yeah, was like, this is the time when Justin Bieber was doing like drag races down Miami street, that kind of thing. I was like, oh, you know, if you're young, you're supposed to be a bit of a dick. Young people who are successful are dicks. You know, you look at celebrities, you look at football players, you know, I think it's at the time of like young, you know, young football players coming up and like being flashy and being that kind of stuff. I was like, that's what young people do. So I'm no different. It's other people that have a problem with me because they're jealous. And that's what I was telling people. I was like, I'm not the problem, other people are the problem, which is completely wrong. Let's just clarify that. But that's what I was telling people. I was telling everyone else had the problem, not me. You know, and that what I was doing was what anyone in my situation would do.
There was, you talk in the book about like a day at the races, and people that would have been around you would have been like, he's young, he's obviously successful, and he's very confident. But from reading the book, it feels like it was the total opposite of confidence.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Every single moment where I was kind of like, call it like, like exerting my behavior on people, it was coming from a real place of insecurity. You know, I was so doubtful in myself that what I was doing was going to be successful. B, that I deserved it. You know, I had people telling me how lucky I was because of everything that went happened previously. I was kind of really kind of like paranoid that I made the right choice to drop out of university and do this. So everything I ever did, all the actions that I had came from a place of real, real insecurity and like constantly trying to prove myself that I made the right choices here. So yeah, there was no confidence being exerted. It was literally like, you look back now, it's radiant, you know, I think to like buying a nice watch, I think to buying a flashy car, I think to living in a house we have. Everything we were trying to do was kind of trying to exert validation externally from other people to say, actually, this is, you know, this is these guys, you know, I've made the right choice to drop out of university. I've made the right choice to do this. This is going to be something which is successful. And like, yeah, there were the level of confidence in me externally, you'd been like, oh God, this guy, yeah, he's so confident. Absolutely not. Absolute shell of an individual internally.
And then when you quit drinking, how do you rebuild that confidence?
Well, there wasn't any confidence to rebuild. That's the piece. So you know you're starting from zero. You're starting from a situation where you've got to, like, when going through the kind of drinking, you have to deconstruct your entire life. So I'm there deconstructing like my week, the way I spend my time, my evenings, my social experiences, my friends, my family, my whole entire identity had to be I was basically like stripped naked and starting again. So like I remember going home like for the first weekend thinking, what the hell does a 23-year-old do on a weekend if they don't drink and they're single? I'm like, what do you do? Like, what am I going to put my energy into? And I couldn't like see a future for like what my life would look like. Because I was so kind of fixated on my life of going out on Fridays, drinking, meeting people, networking events. Like, I had no idea there was another world out there. And like, it's so crazy to think about, but I couldn't see any other world out there. I was like, how am I going to meet people? How am I going to do anything? And like, it's in that situation where you have to kind of do the personal values. And I did a written exercise and I spoke about it in the book around like going back to like happy baby. Like, what did I enjoy when I was a kid? You know, because truth is, you spend 17, 18 years of your life not drinking. Mm. So you build up so many other behaviors, which are much healthier for how you want to spend your time. So I was like, okay, let's build up from the foundations of who I am as a kid and go and spend time doing things that I enjoy doing and try and build a life, build a personality, build a value, set of values, which are there already, but I need to go deep into myself to find them because like, really what I've been doing for the last kind of couple of years is just disregarding them. So, you know, you do the soul searching, you do the who am I, you do all that kind of pieces and you go, actually, you have to start again and have that humbling. And coming back to the point around confidence, the confidence actually, and this is the kind of most ironic thing I ever found about alcohol, is like being sober gives you everything you think alcohol gives you. So that Dutch courage, that confidence you think you're finding from having a drink, you get it tenfold in being sober. So like now, so self-assured in myself, know who I am as a person, walk into an event or a room, obviously don't need to drink, and can talk to anyone. And like, I every time I did that when I was drinking, it would be superficial. Because you know, you'd have the couple of drinks, you'd have a couple more drinks, you'd meet people, you'd net form meaningful relationships, you're probably not listening, you're trying to talk as much as you can. And really, like, the level of confidence is so superficial versus now, like, it's real, you know. So the confidence is rebuilt by knowing who I am, you know, finding out who I am as a person, defining my kind of values as an individual, and living a life which is true to who I am.
I think, like, the confidence bit is so interesting because, like, obviously you're there now. I think of confidence as like a metaphorical shelf of evidence.
Yeah.
So like the more evidence you've got is like, well, I've been in this situation 100 times in the last 8 years. I know that I can do this. I guess the first time that you're doing that, what coping mechanisms did you have? Like when you go into a room, we're talking the first year, like what were you doing? Like what was you telling yourself? I
mean, the truth is, in the first 6 months, you don't go into those rooms.
Okay.
That's the truth of it, is you avoid those rooms like the plague. Like I couldn't bring myself to go to social situations, birthday parties, weddings, all those kind of things. I couldn't be there. So it's avoidance itself. It's a survival mechanism. And then you have this thing where the firsts happen, your first night out, you know, your first festival, your first gig, your first football match. And you start to do these things for the first time. And bear in mind, like, I'd never gone to a festival without getting, you know, smashed up my face. I'd never gone to a football match without having a beer and watching the game and enjoying it. I've never played football without having a beer afterwards. Like, all these things were just like conditioned in me deeply that alcohol is central to these experiences. And obviously nights out and stuff. So did the first Christmas party sober. And like, I remember a feeling of like being high on life that like was just so real. And I remember being in the first festival, I went to Coachella, and like it must have been like sunset on one of the days, like, and I remember going to, I couldn't tell you who it was, but going into a bit of a rave and being sober and just living in my own head of like genuine happiness, a feeling I'd never experienced in terms of like being when I was drinking, and just really loving it, absolutely just loving it. And like, there's a video of me just like doing my own thing, just two-stepping, loving it. And I'm like, I genuinely can't believe I don't know what's going over me here, but I'm just really in a good place. You know, the sun's setting, you've got the hills, you've got the mountains in the background. I'm there with my girlfriend, my mates. I'm having a really good time. And it just felt really great. And those firsts, I remember one of the first football games I went to, you know, it was really kind of like strong feeling of like euphoria. And you build those relationships where you go, oh, actually, these things are more enjoyable about alcohol.
Mm.
And then once you build these case studies up and these proof points, the next time so much easier.
Yeah. So going back in the book, I thought like it was it's great the way that the book's kind of padded out, like, and it tells the story. Like it wasn't just like one moment that made you say, right, this is it. Whereas like, I'm never drinking again. We've all said it and we've all been in that situation. I guess, how did you know after that one day that was the time?
I think the truth is I had no choice. You know, being in someone who's dependent on alcohol, you become a liar. And like at one point during the kind of downhill trajectory on that day, especially, I was seeing this girl who caught me texting another girl. All right. And we've been together for like a month, so it wasn't like official or anything. And she was done. She was like done with me. You know, I'd had an incident with loads of people in the office and they were starting to be done with me. You know, obviously Steve, business partner, was like hearing these things and he was getting done with me. And I'm like at the point where like I'm backed into a corner here. Like genuinely felt like backed into a corner. And I was like, there's no way out of here. I can't sliver and I can't lie for this experience. So I've got two options, okay? This is how I genuinely have two options. I run away or I face up to it. And I think the beautiful thing was like on that day, everyone hated me. So there was no one to go to. I'd started to really burn all bridges with friends, family, this new girl I'm seeing. So all the bridges were burnt. So I had little options, really little options on what to do. And some part of me said, just tell the truth now. Just be honest about how you feel. Just say the truth, because can't get much worse than this. And it was in that moment there where, like, I started to admit that I don't know what's going on, that my actions are not me as a person. Whatever's happening to me, I have no idea what's going on. I don't know why I'm feeling like this. I don't know why I'm acting like this. It's like it has, like, the alcohol, like, a control on me. You know, it's turning me into someone I didn't want to be. And it was saying that for the first time. I'd probably, you know, I'd never said it in my head. I'd never really said it in my head. I just said, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why I'm acting like this. I'm like a very different person. And it was the truth of being, you know, the being backed into a corner, has been put under pressure to, you know, where I have no choice. I've ruined everything around me. I can either run away now and become and lose everything. And I think the interesting part about my story is that I had stuff to lose. You know, could I deal with losing relationships and rebuilding friendships elsewhere? Yeah, probably could have done that. But like having a business and responsibilities and like something which could be tangible one day, I didn't want to lose that. So I had something worth fighting for. And then, you know, that's the next a business side of things. But then you realize that your friends and family were fighting for as well. At that point, you see them as like obstruction and blocking you from being you. So it was the no other options, I think.
And when you said, right, okay, there's no other options, this is, I'll quit drinking. Did you believe that?
So the kind of the first step was like going to see a therapist and like trying to figure out what's wrong. And then the second step was saying, yeah, I need to stop drinking alcohol, because alcohol was causing all the problems. So did I believe it? No, I believe I could do, I set out 3 months. I was like, I'll do 3 months and then see where I am. And then it got to 3 months and I was kind of getting better and my life was moving in the right way. And I kind of said, okay, you know, let's do till Christmas. So this is July to Christmas. And then I was seeing the therapist every single Monday. So it was the first time I had someone I was accountable to. So I couldn't turn up on a Monday and be like, yeah, sorry, Jamie, I got smashed at the weekend. So it was having him in the diary that made me be more accountable.
Mm.
So I'd see him every single Monday. He'd ask me how I did, what I did. And then I'd see him on Thursdays. On Thursdays, he'd ask me what I'm doing this weekend. So it's the first time I had someone who was like listening, helping, supporting, and I'd have homework to do in between. And it got to Christmas time, you know, November, kind of talking about Christmas, what's coming ahead. And he's, you know, and I said, oh, for some reason I held on to the idea of having a glass of champagne at Christmas to celebrate doing that period of time and getting myself better. He said to me, Dominic, if we were talking about cocaine here, would you have a line of cocaine at Christmas to celebrate not doing cocaine for 6 months? And that's when the penny dropped. That's when the penny was dropped. And it was like, oh, you're completely right. Why should I reward myself with the thing that's created the problems? And that for me was like the last emotional connection between my beliefs and alcohol. What he basically done over that 6 months is broken down every emotional connection I had with alcohol, you know, from the medicating to the celebrating to the toasting a glass of champagne at Christmas, to having a Six Nations having a glass of Guinness, to having a Pimm's at the horse racing when the weather's really nice. And slowly but surely, all those kind of emotional things were broken.
Mm.
And the last one was a glass of champagne at Christmas, celebrate. And after that, I was like, oh, you're right, I don't need a drink.
So you changed your whole mindset. You said, I think you've said publicly, like, if somebody could give you a good enough reason, like people obviously ask you, why don't you drink? And it's like, well, why do you drink? I think I read something that if somebody gave you a good reason, you'd drink again, but no one's even come close.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm open-minded to it. If someone says to me a reason I've got to drink, you know, if Doc says to me, you've got to have a glass of gin or you're going to die, I'm going to have a glass of gin. I am. I'm not stupid like that. But like, I haven't been able to see, and this is my kind of thinking behind it and how the work I went through was to remove those emotional connections with alcohol. And once you remove those emotional connections, you've got two options. Yeah, you can replace them with something else because those emotional things still occur, something healthier, or you can carry on the way you are. And the truth is, like, I don't see a situation where you need to drink. Like, and so I say, if someone can give me a really good reason, as to why I should drink for whatever rationale, I'll drink.
I think this is what like the industry needs and like what businesses need, especially because it feels like alcohol is like tied into like work nights out, Christmas parties and feels like that, like networking nights. It feels like there aren't like what are some of the stupid, I guess, beliefs and stupid excuses that you've heard? Because I'm sure that you've been in so many different conversations with people as to, well, I need to drink because of my client or you know, those kind of things. What are some of those ridiculous ideas?
Yeah, look, the I've got to start with the biggest and probably work backwards. The biggest one is that, oh, I feel social pressure not to drink. Yeah, people around me are drinking, so I have to drink. I want to fit in, obviously conforming. I did speak to a sales guy the other day who was like, you know, he went to his boss and said, I need to stop drinking. And he went, well, you can. Yeah, of course you can. But if it starts to impact numbers, you need to start drinking again because clients are expecting you to be drinking.
Come on.
You're like, oh my goodness, like that's the level of leadership. You've got the kind of whole, I like it taste. You know, the taste is good. Which is like, it's the smartest, but it's the most stupid debate. Because you like the taste of it, fine. You like the taste of food, you know, just replace it with something else. You know, it doesn't mean that you have to have it all the time every day.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really kind of defensive one people go to. Yeah, they're the most, but like coming back to the kind of big one is like people around me drink. So I feel like I want to drink because other people drink or I need to drink. So the reason people fail to stop drinking the most is number one, because of social pressures.
Mm.
So let's go back to the point I said earlier about alcohol gives me, not drinking gives me everything alcohol, you think alcohol gives you. What's the biggest reason I don't drink now? You know what it is?
Go on.
Social pressure.
People want you to drink.
No, the biggest reason I don't drink now is because social pressure. Because if people saw me drinking or people knew I drank, that social pressure would be unbearable.
Mm.
So actually, the biggest reason I don't drink is the biggest reason people drink. If those two both things can be true, then the argument of why I drink is because of social pressures is completely invalid.
But you're so confident and kind of reassured in yourself, whereas there'll be people watching this that say, I could never, it's not peer pressure, it's that social pressure of I could never do that, and it's because they lack that kind
but
of...
But I could never drink again because of the social pressures. So you just move yourself to the other camp. If you're worried about social pressure, I'm worried about social pressure. If those things are both true, they cancel each other out. See what I mean?
Mm. And what would you say to the people that, because I can think of like friends I've got that I went to high school and they'll go, I'd lose my whole friendship group. I wouldn't be able to hang out with my work friend. My wife would probably have a pop because she likes a glass of wine.
If I drank, that would happen to me. I'd lose all my friends. I'd lose my wife. All those things would happen to me as well if I drank. So you can decide what camp you're in. Mm. If you think social pressure is a big influence, either be in the camp where it ruins your life and you drink and you have terrible situations, or be in my camp where if you drank, all those things would happen as well. So either you're on my side or you're on the side, and I know which side I'd rather be on.
Yeah.
So social pressures exist on both sides. So they're going to exist regardless. So regardless if you drink or not drinking, social pressure is there. Just choose whether the social pressure makes you drink or not drink.
And I think this is what I've loved about kind of your story and your book as somebody that's kind of dabbled and dabbling with sobriety as well. It's like, it's not preachy. Like that book, I don't read that book and feel like, oh, someone's telling me I have to stop drinking now. Like, I think you're very much like, do what's right for you, but this is my story, this is my evidence, and this is the facts. Like it's a book filled with science.
Yeah, and that's really important for me to get across, because like, I started off with this mindset of like, alcohol's the devil, alcohol's really bad. But I said, sure that we all know that. Like, there's not many people now who don't know alcohol's bad. So like, let's not go after alcohol because people know it. No, let's not tell people how bad alcohol is. Let's just explain a story of like what the alternative looks like. And I think that's what I really tried to strike a balance between, is like being hard hitting and like insight driven with an ounce of realness in terms of like personal stories from friends and family of things I've gone through, people I've spoken to previously, and just see what the world thinks of it.
Mm. Do you know the one thing in your book that surprised me, that I was really like interested to read about, and I was kind of shocked that it was in there, was the topic around sober sex.
Yep.
Like, just mad to think of like that as like a topic, but something that you don't think about. And like, what made you, we don't need to get too gruesome into the detail, but like, what made you want to like put that in? And you put like a brilliant perspective from a female in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, that really, like, from a female perspective, like, I go back to all the stories, and I used to, from my perspective, I only know what it's like to be like a 6'3" guy who's always been pretty big, like, in themselves, and probably never been in a situation of danger. And like, through the sober kind of journey, I've met a lot of girls who've gone sober, and their reasons are much different to mine. And I think that the safety element of it and sex, and those two things are very closely linked, is a much larger on their reasons for going drinking, stopping drinking, than anything else. Like, bad experiences for them, safety wise, losing control, losing, you know, whatever you call it, and ending up in situations where not nice stuff happens is their defining factor. It's their rock bottom. Mm. Their moments when they go, that shouldn't happen again, because there's much more at stake for girls in those situations. And I wanted to kind of talk about it from my point of view, from a male point of view, and from a female point of view, and then also talk about a little bit from the dating side of things, what it's like actually going dating and being single. Because I remember looking back, thinking when I was a kid, I don't remember having sex sober, ever. Ever. Every single girl I'd ever be with, I'd had a drink at some point.
Mm.
Even if it's one, you know, apart from, you know, ones I'm in a relationship with, but meeting new people. So you're like, oh my goodness, like, our entire, you know, I remember meeting, like, seeing a girl for a bit, and we'd just get drunk on nights out and hook up, and didn't really know what she was like. Never really spoke to her sober. Bizarre. So yeah, just I thought it was important just to share female perspectives in it.
And that's what I loved about the book. Like, it's there's different element, like everything that you could, if you did a mind map and you put sobriety or alcohol, like bit awareness, like I feel like you covered everything from like the therapeutic, like the cycle of change, yeah, to like life hacks and like do this at a party, and like it's a real survivor's guide, as well as kind of stories that paint your picture. I guess before we wrap up, one of the things that you speak beautifully about is something that you phrase, glass bottoms.
Yeah.
What's a glass bottom?
So it's taking the element of glass ceilings, yeah. So people always talk about breaking through glass ceilings. So you look at a ceiling and you go, oh yeah, you know, if I do X, Y, Z, I can break through it and become the next level.
Mm.
Glass bottoms is the take on that from like a downhill perspective. So, you know, I always felt like you're standing there in a situation where you think you've got your shit together, and then actually, no, something happens, a night out happens, and you smash through it and you get to the next level of like down the hill. You know, I always see it as like a, you know, you're falling down a cliff, whatever, you're falling down a thing and you break through a glass bottom. And then like you get to the next glass bottom and you're there like, okay, it's only up from here. It's only glass ceilings. I can only get better from here. And then something happens again and you break through that one as well. And like each time the glass gets thicker. So like the force it takes you to break through it, it gets bigger.
Mm.
So you get more damaged on the way down. And like, I've had this real paradox of like people who drink, they reach a rock bottom. We talked about it a little bit today. And like, I kind of think a little bit like, did I reach rock bottom, or am I just stood on another glass bottom? And so when people ask me about drinking again, I go, I'm very worried that the next time I break through the glass bottom, the level of destruction it's going to cause me in my life is so much greater than the last time that actually I'm still scared. I'm scared because, you know, in that situation we talked about on my last day, is like, could have lost my business, could have lost my girl I was seeing. So I always forget this point, that girl that I was seeing at that point is now my wife. I always forget to end that. So like, I could have lost that, I could have lost my friends, but I didn't. So the next time I drink, which I'm obviously not going to do, hopefully, is like, I could lose my wife, probably will. Probably will lose my job, probably lose my business, probably lose my friends. So like, what's at stake next time is so much greater.
Mm.
So am I on a glass bottom or did I reach rock bottom? It's a kind of thought I always go through. So yeah, that's what I think about. So my kind of, when I talk to people about it, is like, at some point there's got to be a bottom, and sometimes there's going to be a glass bottom you're going to break through, which is going to do so much damage that actually rebuilding yourself on the way up is going to be really, really difficult.
Mm. And I think that's like a beautiful, like, I think people listening to this will be like, and I've been there in the past, but you think like, I'll wait until I hit rock bottom and then I'll make a change, like one more time. Whereas actually it's just, what would you say? Like, obviously the book isn't preaching, like if people are watching this, they should definitely go out and get the book. But like, what, for somebody that sat there hungover, it's a Sunday morning, between, they could be 18, they could be 35, they could be any age, but like, what do you wish you knew earlier on before you kind of reached that glass bottom?
Yeah, I think, look, you know, we're not going too much into like my early stage of like life, but I was very, very normal. You know, people meet me now and they're like, of course he doesn't drink, because he's always not drank. And he was, you know, people ask me whether it's for health reasons or whether it's for that. Like 18, 19, I was just very down the line normal. Like normal Jack the Lad, normal person. Like I had no trajectory in my life of like going to start a business. I had no trajectory of like anything. I was just run of the mill. And then like life happens. And what I've realized growing up is that life, the older you get, the faster life happens. And what I never learned, and this is, you know, again, because I'm young here, I never learned coping strategies to cope with the things life threw at you. Mm. And thankfully, but also difficultly in my life, life threw a lot of things at me very young. And I had to learn how to cope with them, and I didn't learn how to cope with them. Now I've gone through those and I've had to learn how to deal with them. And life still throws things at me, and life has thrown things at me in the last couple of years, which is worse than what I went through then. But because I've learned how to deal with it, I'm much better at coping. So my advice is that, you know, regardless of the situation you're in, wherever you are in life, and they talk about this a little bit with kind of poverty and homelessness, is that you're always a couple of things away from happening to really derail your life in a way which you can't comprehend. And I would say that if you think you've got an unhealthy relationship with alcohol and life throws these things at you, that's going to become really damaging, because you're going to not have a way of coping. So my advice, my kind of what I try and get across in the book, is like understanding ways of coping, changing behavior, healthy ways, because you never know what's going to happen in life. And as we get older, you know, my grandparents getting older, my family dog got put down the other day, people around me are starting to get illness. I'm starting to notice a lot of people getting, you know, unfortunately getting cancer and other things. So much is going on in life that you need to be able to cope with the eventualities of life. And if you don't, there's a possibility that your addictions, your behaviors will make that worse, not better. Mm. There's no one who will go through a very bad week, drink a lot of alcohol and go, oh, I feel much better now. It only can compound the issues and make them worse. So that's the tone, is like, I've gone through more shit now in the last couple of years than I had when I was drinking, but I can just deal with it better because I've learned who I am, how to respond. I don't drink and make it worse. You know, the situations now in my life, if I was drinking, it would just make it 10 times worse. I'd be an angrier person, I'd be upset. I wouldn't have dealt with things different. I wouldn't have dealt with things in the same way. So yeah, that's what I kind of think.
I always think like if you were to prepare for a marathon, you've got to prepare like the worst day is coming. Like the day where you lose your parents or whatever, like you've got to be prepared for that. Let's say we removed alcohol completely from Dom's life. Dom never touched a drop. Like, is there a level of gratitude for like drinking? Because obviously you drank and you did, like there was so much chaos and mayhem around that. But you've got to a point now where you can sit here and be like, well, this is what I've learned. I'm more resilient. What is there a level of gratitude for alcohol?
Yeah, I mean that last day I drank is the best day of my life. Like that's the best day of my life. Genuinely. If it never happened, I wouldn't be thankful for this. But I had some great times. I've got so many memories with friends, done so many funny situations. There's a whole element of learning who you are and meeting new people and doing, you know, funny stuff when you're drunk, and great experiences you'll share at young age. But that can't happen forever. And unfortunately, what was happening with me is like, there was never any limits that I could create. I was never told how much you drink is too much. I grew up in a very safe town, so there was never any kind of like social issues of like, you know, if I had £10 left, yeah, when I was 18, I was very, and it was a nice day, I could, even if it was a cold day, I knew I could go and get more drinks, spend all that money and walk home, even if it was an hour and a half, because nothing's going to happen on my way home. So I made decisions like that. You know, if I got ridiculously drunk in a nightclub, I remember actually thinking this a lot of times, is like, I know that person over there, I know that person over there, like no one's going to start on me, I'm not going to get a fight here, so I can drink as much as I want because people know, like it's a very small town, so someone will look after me. I move out with my friends, someone's going to go. So I never learned a limit. And I went to the University of Edinburgh, where again, same feel as York, it's a very safe place. So there was never a moment in my life where I had to learn a limit of like, oh, maybe you need to not drink because of this. So like, I never learned to stop. Had to learn to stop. And then when I started the business, I had no one I was responsible to, no boss who was going to pull me up on drinking too much, compressed amounts of alcohol. My parents couldn't do it. I had resources to be able to drink as much as I wanted to. So like, I never learned a limit. So what started out as like something which was innocent and normal, straight down the line, average person, because of what happened in my life, became a bigger issue. So yeah, you know, am I grateful for like what happened to me? Yes. I'm also grateful for like having a good life, in that I've got some very funny stories from when I was very good. And that's why I started the book at the top of the slope, because there were good times. And I had a great times when I was drinking. And I'm not sat here trying to say to people, alcohol has ruined my life from day one. You know, I had a drink at 16 and my life's been downhill since then. Not at all. Alcohol created my life because I got drunk. I started a Twitter account. I had a great time at university. I have amazing friends. It gave me so many stories. But the rapid decline of my life that alcohol caused, I do believe can happen to anyone.
That's quite a nice loop. It's the alcohol was the alcohol tweet of being hungover was you Mickey Mouse, and it's made such an impact on your life.
That's why the book's got slopes in it. The speed I went from the top of the slope to rock bottom was 9 months. I destroyed so much of my life in 9 months. I think that's possible for anyone. And I guess come back to the point of like, what I'm going to try to give to the world is that you don't know when you're at the top, and you don't know how fast you can fall to the bottom. And if you have a healthier relationship with alcohol or any addiction, that slope will, you'll probably never fall down it, or you'll fall slower and you'll wake up to the facts of it. But that's, you know, what the book tells you is that life changes so quickly, and yeah, you've got to be able to cope with it.
I think like we started the conversation by talking about whether or not you were a role model. I think listening to the conversation, it is for anybody that's definitely battling. And I think for the world of entrepreneurship and alcohol, they go hand in hand. So I think this is inspiring, and you definitely are a role model. I guess this feels like a real defining chapter in your life. What is next for Dom? What does the next decade look like?
That's a big mission statement. Yeah, there'll be some things that happen. I'm doing the investment now, doing Fearless, doing the training. I've got other ambitions that I'd like to go into in the future, but you know, that's a way away. So yeah, just continue to help people, continue to do the right things. Love to be a dad one day. That'd be incredible for me. Just enjoy life.
You seem content.
Yeah. I think there's a level of learning to accept and be happy with the small stuff. And I think that's, this doesn't have to go in the podcast. It can go in the podcast if you want it to. I hate the fact when people who have been successful say, it's not about money, it's not about this, it's about that. I hate it. I genuinely hate it because I think it's very patronizing, but it's also true. And like, it doesn't matter about how much is in your bank account, it doesn't matter how much you've done, it's the little stuff that matters. And I think coming back to the happy baby that I went for when I was drinking, it was that stuff. You know, I remember the first day I laughed, like profusely, belly laughed for a long time. And it was over just throwing a watermelon around the house with my parents. The most stupid stuff ever, but it was the first time that I actually felt happy in such a long time. And like, for me, like, that was a much better feeling than the day I listed my company and got the shares and saw how much money was in my bank account. And like, one of them is just laughing with family, and the other is what people chase. And you know, if you ask me every single day which one I'd rather have, it's that feeling. I still remember that feeling so strongly in me.
Dom, thank you. This has been an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for coming down and chatting with us. As we release this, the book is out now in all good shops and online. Go and find it, download it. And if you are questioning whether now is the time to put the beer down, it might be a good time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.